Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Little Fish. We've been so happy to get messages from you guys to say that you've been enjoying this show, and we certainly enjoy making it. It's a little bit more loose, a little bit more silly than the normal shows, but we really love getting your facts, so please do keep sending those in. The reason I've disturbed the start of your show today is because I want to tell you about a quiz that we're doing. It is for Patreon subscribers on the top tier, and it will take place on the 23rd of January at 7 p.m. UK time. So that'll be sometime in the afternoon if you're in North America, and it'll be very early in the morning if you're in Australia or New Zealand, but hopefully you will still be able to join us. It's going to be a whole load of fun. We've got loads of amazing stuff planned for you, and if you are not a member of Patreon right now, then you have to go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish and join our top tier. You could probably just do it for a month and then quit if you just want to do the quiz, but honestly, there's so much good stuff on our Patreon that I really think once you join, you will be hooked, because we have extra content, we have merch, we have video content, there's all sorts of stuff on there. We hope we've made it value for money, because people going on there help to support the podcast, so it is a real good mutual benefit thing. Anyway, enough of that. Really hope you enjoyed this episode of Little Fish.
Hi everybody.
Oh, listener, Andy's got a cold, and it's actually a really bad one.
I've had a super sniffle. Hi everybody, welcome to Little Fish. This is our audience fact show, so never mind our boring old facts. It's time for your boring old facts instead. You've been sending them in to podcast@qi.com, and we've been reading them, collating them, winnowing them, doing extra research on them, and here are your best facts from the last 7 days. So let's go.
What you can't see, listener, is the most British thing is happening in the background. As Andy is introducing the show, he's pouring himself a thermos of tea.
Yes, we're recording this on apparently my Duke of Edinburgh.
I thought it was incredible how you multitasked there.
Thank you very much.
Because actually, I think the listener wouldn't have been able to tell he was pouring that tea until you mentioned it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There you go.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. But look, enough of this. Enough of this banter. Let's have some factor. Let's have some facts. Who would like to start?
We got sent in a fact by Alex Hawes. And Alex says, Nazi propaganda in the 1930s relied heavily on an Englishman called Dick Seaman.
Come on, Fitz. No.
Who had such a bad time in the English public school system that he just turned.
Yeah. I wouldn't blame him.
Yep.
Why would you give someone a name like that? You'd think his dad would have learned, given the fact he was called William Seaman, Willie Seaman. Come on.
Good Lord.
Come on, indeed.
Yeah. So this is Richard Dick Seaman. He was a British racing driver, and he was signed by the state-backed Mercedes team in the mid-1930s to race in the precursor to what is modern F1. And he was appointed as a non-German to be part of the teams. He was signed off by Goebbels, wow, who showed him to Hitler. Hitler loved him. Hitler thought he was amazing. In fact, when he died, and sadly, Dick Seaman did die in a crash during a race, Hitler sent the biggest bouquet of flowers to the funeral. So
Hitler.
It is, really.
Oh, I've got to send the biggest bouquet of flowers. Do you know what I mean? It's just showing off.
Yeah. He's the kind of person that, you know, like if someone does a sponsored swim and everyone sponsors you for £5, he would do £6.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, God. I knew I didn't like him, but that's really taking it to a new territory.
Interesting fact about Seaman.
Yeah.
I mentioned in an earlier, I think it was a Little Fish, about a football team in Indonesia or the Philippines called Seaman Pandang.
Yes.
And I said that the name Seaman came from a cement company.
Oh, yeah.
And someone messaged me on Instagram. It was Lars Vanthoff. And Lars said that they lived in Bali most of their life, and they can tell me that the word semen means cement in Indonesia.
Oh.
So it's not a brand name.
Yeah.
It's just a generic word for cement. So whatever this person ever had to buy cement, because they were an English speaker, they thought it was very amusing.
Yeah. As you would.
Just while we're on sports and fascism and the 1930s.
Brilliant. Who knew it was going to go in this direction?
Who knew our listeners had such a niche knowledge base?
Well, Stefan Barrett and Mark Norman have both sent in a brilliant fact.
Uh-huh.
So I'll start with Stefan. Stefan says, infamous right-wing dictator Benito Mussolini's great-grandson, Romano Floriani Mussolini, is a professional footballer who plays on, any guesses?
Sorry, on?
The right wing.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay,
And at a good level too, apparently, in the top Italian league.
Really?
Serie A. That's right. And Mark adds, Mark says that fact as well, and says, just a trivial thing I found amusing when I was told it. I'm sure he's a lovely person, and it does state on his Wikipedia that he has no interest in politics.
Cool.
Interesting. I have a feeling that Gaddafi's son might have played professional football.
Really?
At a relatively high level, maybe Serie B or something.
Yeah.
I think I might be wrong about that. Here's a fact from Scott Parsons, who writes that they work in clinical trials and thought we would like to know some of the papers that Scott has come across over the years. So he found that the half-life of communal teaspoons is 42. So if you have a load of teaspoons in the office, then after 42 days, half of them will have disappeared.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
And it rakes over an old wound for us, which we don't need to get into now.
Like, I still don't understand how I got involved in that controversy.
Well, because you kept putting the spoons in the bin.
God, wasn't me doing that.
Forks. I think it was, there were no forks.
Or knives. It was one of them. All I did was jump in saying, hey, it could have been any one of us, so that whoever did it would feel, okay, it's not a problem to admit to it.
You know Knives Out?
Yeah.
The first ever mystery that Benoit Blanc solved was what happened to the knives in the QI office, and that's how that series got its name.
Yeah.
There we go. And was I fingered by
it was cut from the final film that scene, but
Scott also found that if you need a problem to be solved quickly, brain surgeons are better than rocket scientists.
Really?
Ah, interesting.
According to a study. Because there's that whole, speaking of popular culture as we were, there's that Mitchell and Webb sketch, isn't there, where the brain surgeon meets the rocket scientist.
Yes.
Which is very good. But what do you reckon's hardest, brain surgery or rocket science?
I feel like brain surgery is harder because it's more fiddly.
I think it's largely machines these days, so I think rocket science...
What, you think rocket science is one of the last sort of craftsmen?
Yes.
What, you think they're hewing those from timber, do you?
It's an old nonna in Italy. It makes it from willow.
It's mostly machines these days. I think brain surgery is largely, you're not necessarily going in with your hands anymore.
You program it, don't you?
Yeah.
And then you just press button one.
Yeah, it's a bit, it's no harder than playing Street Fighter these days.
Yeah. Yeah. And when in doubt, just mash all the buttons and that'll probably do something. It'll definitely do something.
If it shouts finish him, you know you've done something wrong. So brain surgery in the UK, you need to do a 5-year medical degree, then 2 years of foundation training, then at least 8 more years of neurosurgical training. Whereas to be a rocket scientist, you'd need to do your degree, but then you could do an apprenticeship after that and go straight into the industry. So you need to do a lot more studying to be a brain surgeon.
Okay.
Interesting.
There's got to be levels of rocket scientist. You start off making tea and just chatting with rocket scientists.
T-5, T-4.
Come on. Please.
Wonderful.
I'm going to take the rest of the day off.
That's it.
I got a good one here.
Yeah?
From Alex Hartley.
Okay.
Oh.
Who says, the guy from Milli Vanilli.
Which guy? There were two of them.
There were two of them. One sadly passed away now.
Oh.
But the other one.
Who were they, by the way? Just for more context.
So Milli Vanilli were this double act. Two incredibly handsome guys.
Uh-huh. Singers. Ostensibly.
Yes.
But it turned out that they'd been miming on Top of the Pops.
That's right. Well, not just miming on Top of the Pops. So they had this unbelievably successful debut album. It sold 8 million copies. They were absolutely everywhere. They were huge. We're talking 1989 here. Mm-hmm. They were superstars. They won the Grammy for Best New Artist.
Yeah.
And then they were revealed not to have sung any of their live gigs where they were all lip syncing or any of their recordings.
Right.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't their voices.
Yeah.
At any point.
It was such a big story that I will have been like, what, 10 years old at this time. And at school, we all knew this story.
Yeah, okay.
And we would make jokes about it and stuff like that.
And the backlash was huge. Yeah. Fans destroyed their records, you know, and that's millions of records. It's the
millions and vanillions.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And
why are you still here to even make that joke?
I feel like it's going downhill, isn't it?
Diminishing returns, yeah. But it's the only time a Grammy has ever been rescinded.
Wow.
They took it off them, did they?
And some real hounds have won Grammys, I suspect. I suspect some people have won Grammys who are rotters.
But probably sang their songs.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the situation, right? And Alex's fact is, the guy from Milli Vanilli, who had to give back a Grammy, is nominated this year for a Grammy for narrating the audiobook of the story of Milli Vanilli.
So good.
Absolutely stunning.
And that, I think, is next year's Grammys. I think the 2026. The categories have been announced.
Indeed, this year, by the time this goes out.
Absolutely. Yeah. This year. Hello, everybody. And Happy New Year.
The Golden Globes have added a podcast category this year.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
So the Grammys might eventually go on to that. We might get a Grammy one day.
We were not eligible for the Golden Globes one.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was like, I think only the top 10 podcasts in the world were up for, like, there was some rule that meant that.
And we're number 11, aren't we?
Typical. Typical.
And there was definitely some rule that I saw it and thought, let's just throw our hat in the ring. Why not? But we couldn't.
Damn it.
I'm gutted about that.
Also, we don't do our own podcast, do we? We have voice actors who come in and do this.
Yeah, yeah. I got the weirdest sounding guy to do mine.
The guy who's nominated, Fabrice Morvan, is up against a friend of yours, Dan, in the Grammy category audiobook this year.
Are you taking the piss out of me? Is this a real friend or?
It's someone you, I think, admire and someone I associate with you.
Is it the guy who runs the Crab Museum in Margate?
The guy who runs the Crab Museum in Margate.
Bert, he's nominated. Oh, that's very good.
Brian Blessed?
They've both spent time in Tibet, I'd say.
Is it Xi Jinping?
Is it a Yeti?
It's the Dalai Lama.
Lama.
Wow.
He's up for a Grammy, which I think at this stage would be a real fillip for his career. I think he needs that boost.
Yeah. How wonderful.
Yeah.
He's got a lovely voice.
Well, is it nicer than Fabrice Morvan's voice?
I wouldn't know. I don't think anyone's heard it. Alice Hill has sent in two facts to us. One is from personal experience. She said you can flip a breech baby while it's still inside the mum. She's like, it's pretty common.
Breech baby being?
A breech baby is when the baby's facing the wrong way when birth is about to
bum
happen.
First.
Yeah. You want it the other way around. So you can, she says, literally massage the baby. Mm. Two doctors can do it and they can massage it 180 degrees into the right position for birth.
Crazy.
Which is amazing. So this is obviously someone who loves a bit of science, curious about the world. Here's the actual fact she sent in. Years ago, I worked at a Christmas tree farm on a particularly hot summer's day and I saw a bumblebee performing oral sex on another bumblebee.
Come on.
The receiving bee was laxed out, front arms up, holding some pine needles, front facing, bum forward. Other bee, face deep. I'll never forget that sight. It was before the time of phone cameras, so alas, no photographic proof.
How convenient.
I've since tried to research it online. A bit tricky, though, for obvious reasons. Maybe you guys could find out if it's a thing. Alice, I looked into it. It is absolutely not a thing.
I don't know what you saw, Alice. I assume it was two humans in bumblebee costumes.
Quiz corner.
Oh, yeah.
Frey van der Vleut writes, why, in most car commercials, do you only see the following letters and numbers on the number plates? A, H, I, M, O, T, U, V, W, X, 08.
I think I worked it out.
Is it kind of like a lot of TV shows will use the same phone number because you don't want to use a license plate that's out there?
That's a good idea. And those letters are not on any other license plate in the world,
exactly.
Are they?
Exactly. There you go.
Go on, James.
It can only be because they're all symmetrical.
Yes.
And so they must flip the footage or something.
It's because The image can then be mirrored to make the car drive on the correct side of the road, depending on what country the commercial is airing
in.
Of course.
That's clever. I've looked into it a bit more. It seems to be true. And often you will see a car driving along in what is quite clearly Southern Europe.
Yeah, quite often in Iceland or something.
Yeah.
And they're driving on the left-hand side of the road.
A beautiful sun-drenched canyon. Or, you know, a majestic mountain. And it's just like, it's clearly not the UK. So I don't know how much good it does.
It's a really good fact.
Yeah.
And a good question as well.
So thank you for A.
Here's another one that is based on roads.
Yeah.
This is from Alan Mitchell. And Alan says he used to be a motorcycle instructor. And one fun question we used to ask is if anyone knew what the black horizontal line was on a crossing patrol sign, like a lollipop person would use. On the round bit at the top, it says stop, children. But then there's like a black lozenge in the middle of it.
Okay.
And Alan wonders what that was for. Or in fact, he knows what it's for. He's told us.
It's going to be for the drivers.
Yeah, I read the email in the first place when it came into the inbox. So
actually, this quiz is for one person in this room only.
Why would there be a black dot in the middle?
Lozenge. Not a dot, a lozenge. That's, I'd say, essential, James. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, the blackness is important.
A lozenge, and like the sweetie.
Yeah, like a long...
Like a sausage.
Like a sausage.
Right.
Why would there be a sausage on a lollipop, though?
I'm just going to tell you.
Yeah, I don't think I can get this.
According to Alan, it's a blackboard, and you would write down the number plates of vehicles who fail to stop.
What?
If you're a lollipop.
If you're a lollipop person.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the cars doesn't stop, they've committed an offence, so you would write down the number plate.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the main problem is it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
No.
But I've looked online, and it's definitely often said that this is true. And usually it's the lollipop people who say it.
Right.
I haven't found any sort of official source, like the Department of Transport or the Highway Code or anything like that, that says that this is true. It's hard to see how it would be useful.
Well, I frequently try when I'm out and about to remember a license plate that passes by.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, just because I think I might be called on at some point to remember a license plate, you know, at short notice.
Like, yeah, yeah.
What if that car does commit an offence?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll need to say, yes, officer, I remember it very clearly.
How many do you retain?
I've got them all.
Cool.
Got to be 4,000 or 5,000 that I've memorized over the course of my life.
One day that might come in useful. That
absolutely, could. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, please test me now.
November the 4th, 2022.
Didn't spot any that day. I was at home.
You were sick.
Yeah, yeah. Please, another.
November 3rd, 2022.
I was on holiday.
Were you?
Yeah.
No cars? Where you went?
I was on the Isle of Sark. Beautiful place. Lovely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no cars. No cars. On Sark, famously.
All right. Well, story checks out. So
the thing is, like, why not just have a notepad?
Yeah.
Why write it on something where it might get washed off or whatever? Like,
yeah,
if you need to keep hold of the license plate numbers,
yes,
that is not the best place to put it. You might want to write it on there so that people can see it and it shames people, but who remembers anyone's number plate enough to be like, oh, that's...
Well,
obviously,
I do. Yeah.
Obviously, for you it would work, but for most people it wouldn't. So it's really interesting whether this is true or not. Certainly, people who are involved in the community do think it's true, but there is no real evidence, and it's hard to see how it would make sense.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So if you know the absolute certainty that this is true or not true, then do write into podcast@qi.com.
Very cool. I like it. I've got one that I can fashion into a question as well. This is from Sean Slater. He says, for every American president assassination, a Lincoln has been present.
Certainly in the one where Abraham Lincoln was shot.
Yeah.
He was there
Mary
for that.
Lincoln was there, his wife.
Yeah, and Abraham was there too. So you got two Lincolns there.
Garfield.
Yep.
Was shot by that guy with a weird name, like a...
Gitto?
Yes.
Charles Gitto?
Charles Lincoln Gitto.
Yeah, that's correct. And Robert Todd Lincoln, who was Abraham Lincoln's son, was there.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Yes.
McKinley? Was McKinley shot?
McKinley, correct.
McKinley was shot.
And was there a Lincoln, a member of the Lincoln family was there?
The same Lincoln, Robert Todd Lincoln was
really?
There.
Really?
Yeah, he was even quoted later as saying, I'm not going to any more events because it's got a certain fatality about it when I go.
And don't tell me JFK was driving in a Lincoln.
He was in a Ford Lincoln Continental car. You got it.
Wow.
Very nice.
That's great.
Very good.
Very fun quiz. I think we must be getting towards the end of this now.
I think so. I think let's switch over into friend of the podcast mode and dedicate some facts to people who've joined on Patreon at the top tier. If you've joined at friend of the podcast, we would like to dedicate one of our facts to you. So let's dish out a few of those now. I'll kick off with one. Vicky, congratulations to you. You are now the custodian of the fact that kangaroos have 5 legs.
Bad luck, Vicky.
Yeah.
This was one of those rare ones where we just made stuff up.
That's right. No, it's that their tail is a 5th leg. According to all sorts of tests, they've put kangaroos on treadmills and they've done all sorts of science on
it. Because they use it for walking.
Yes, they use it to propel themselves. Yeah.
That's very good. That was a James Harkin fact, Vicky. Episode 19.
Yeah.
So congratulations. Shall I do one?
Yeah.
We've got an Anna Tashinsky fact to give out, and that's going to Ewan Taylor. And that fact is that during the financial crisis of 1720, Parliament called for stockbrokers to be stitched into sacks and thrown into the Thames.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild, this fact. There's a bracket here, an extra bit of info for your fact, Ewan, which is that this was a speech by Lord Molesworth. People who committed parricide were stitched into the sack with a rooster, a monkey, and a dog.
I think that was in ancient Rome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think it was in 1720s London.
Feels like that wouldn't be the case, would it? Yeah.
I mean, it is 300 years ago, but that feels like it had gone out of fashion.
That was definitely an ancient thing. Okay, well, congratulations to you, Ewan. And the next one is now under the custodianship of Jen Sykes. And Jen, this is your fact. It is that there are 3 times as many estate agents in the UK as members of the armed forces.
Yes.
Who could have brought that fact to the table?
Who likes warfare?
It's mine. It's my fact. Congratulations, Jen. This is a great fact. And excitingly, I imagine the ratio will have only improved if you're an estate agent or got worse if you're a member of the armed forces since then. Because this was about 10 years ago. So
yeah.
I don't think the army's doubled in size in the last 10 years.
Was this the fact where Dan told us about how his wife made him hide his Cocoa Pops in the washing machine?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it was. Because maybe you were selling your house and people would come round and your wife didn't want people to know that there was an adult in there who was eating Cocoa Pops.
Yeah, it possibly is then. That was the wildest guess where game I've ever had to play in my house. Everything was not where it should have been.
Because it is a risk. It's a risk that if you have a viewing of your flat and someone opens the washing machine, which they wouldn't do normally, but you never know. People like looking inside cupboards and things, and they look in and see Cocoa Pops and they think, well, this person's very unstable. I'm not going to buy them.
All you really do when you're buying a house is bang on the worktops a few times and then hit the wall and go, oh, that's a supporting wall.
Yeah.
Ask if there's any ghosts you need to know about and get out of there. Okay, here's another fact, and this one is one of my ones. It's going out to Brian Kelly. It's the fact that in medieval manuscripts, there are hundreds of drawings of snails and knights fighting each other, and nobody knows why.
Oh yeah, I remember this one.
Wow.
It's really cool.
Charming.
In the margins of all these old books, there's these drawings of these battles going on.
But it's just like a cultural meme, isn't it?
It's just
sort of, that's the thing everyone's drawn in the books for the last 100 and 200 years.
So it's the 6-7 of its day, basically.
6-7 of its day. Here's a fact that is now under the custodianship of Leah Smallercomb. It's that the most painful place to be stung by a bee is inside your nostril.
Oh, yes. What a great fact.
Yes.
And that's because someone actually tried it out, right?
Yeah. There was a student called Michael Smith who let bees sting him all over his body and rated which was the most painful.
Things we do for science. What heroes?
Well, how precise do you want to get with it, though? Because I don't know if this student said, right, so I've done testicle, but I've only done top of testicle.
Yeah.
I'd better do mid-testicle, base of testicle, being stung by a bee. Like, how scientific are we getting here?
Probably there is work to be done from another scientist now and building on Michael's work.
That could be you.
If you're at university and you're looking for something for your PhD, find yourself a bee.
Yeah, if it's not mid-blowjob, you can get it to...
Oh my goodness, I've just looked up Michael's study. He said he was carrying the work done by the Schmidt sting pain index, which is all about different kinds of insect. Michael's study said the pain was rated on a 1 to 10 scale relative to an internal standard, the forearm. So the forearm is your baseline.
Okay.
The three least painful locations were the skull, middle toe tip, and upper arm. The three most painful locations were the nostril, upper lip, and penis shaft.
I mean, when you say penis shaft, it does imply that other parts had been tried. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would just say penis.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, here's another fact. This one is now under the custodianship of Stephen Winfield. Stephen, your new fact that you have to look after, forsaking all others, is this one. Walt Disney's favorite breakfast was fresh donuts dunked in Scotch whiskey.
Lovely.
Yes.
Wowzers.
That was one of mine. We had a great chat about Disney in that one. There was a fact, I think, James, that you found, which is the story that he went into cryogenics to look after his body that he could be woken up one day. But you found that's not true. I think we all know that's not true. But what James found is that actually the one bit of his body that he did used to put on ice was his testicles.
I don't remember this at all.
Oh, yeah. I think it was you, James.
Was it after he deliberately had a bee sting them?
The idea was, I think it was a fertility idea that when him and his wife were trying to conceive, they said, put your balls on ice. And so he used to do that a lot. Yeah.
There is the theory, which I don't think is true, which is that Disney's Frozen was given that name so that when people Google Frozen Disney, they don't get stories of his cryogenesis.
I think it's a beautiful theory if it's not true. Like, it's just a wonderful connection that someone's made. Yeah.
And that's why the song Let It Go, he's talking to the people who keep spreading this rumor. He's like, let it go, guys, let it go.
You see? I think that's you've built on the theory.
Yeah, the cold never bothered my testicles anyway. Okay, we got time for a couple more?
Yeah, let's do a couple more.
This is going to Beth. It's an Andrew Hunter Murray fact. Shouting at drivers improves their driving.
I'll stand by it.
Watch the road!
That kind of stuff.
Shouting at drivers improves... Was this presumably some kind of study?
Yeah, it's a study in Kenya. They have lots of buses which crash quite frequently, or they certainly did at the time. And I think they put up stickers inside the buses saying, if your driver is driving erratically, please shout at them and go at them.
Right.
It depends what they're shouting.
What are they shouting? Yeah, yeah.
There's a tradition that has to be adhered by Japanese train drivers that I read about where they have to point at things while they're driving as a way of maintaining their concentration.
Really?
Yeah, so you would point at a sign.
And read it out as well, I think.
Right.
And the idea is that you just don't get monotonously kind of half asleep because you're just doing the same thing over and over again. You have to go... Osaka.
But surely driving a high-tech Japanese train these days is much like brain surgery in that you just, you know, program in the destination and then you just sit back and fall asleep.
You would think so.
Yeah, you'd think. Yeah, there's more to it. Well, cool. Congratulations to Beth.
I'll do one. This one goes out to Ali ML. Ali, your fact is that the French used to call arsenic succession powder because it was used in so many murders.
Yes.
Le poudre du succession. I'm not just clumsily assuming that that's what it is. I'm pretty sure that's what the French phrase is.
Very cool.
Right.
Yeah.
It was Anne Miller's fact, wasn't it? Because it was an area that she was particularly interested in at the time.
Yes.
And as we know, it's always wonderful to hear a Scottish person say murder.
Murder. And when I say what she wasn't interested in murdering her husband, it was that she was into her crime.
Well,
novels and...
not her first husband, who sadly passed away in an accident, and the second through fifth husbands as well. But now she's happy with Javier, and there's no need to refer to any of those remarkably strange accidents. Anyway, so congratulations, Ali. That's a fact for you. And congratulations to all our fact custodians today. Beth, Ali, Stephen, Leah, Brian, Jen, Ewan, and Vicky. Those of you who have signed up and haven't had your shout out yet, it is coming. As I say, we've had a bit of a rush on. Sorry about that. We're going to try and do them as speedily as is decent, but also in a way that remains fun for you, the listener. If you would like to join as a friend of the podcast, just go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish, and you can have a look there and for all sorts of things like ad-free episodes and bonus content and all of that. It's all there, and it's a great club to be part of. But that's it for this episode of Little Fish. We'll be back again in a week's time with another one. And we'll be back in 3 days' time with the main show. Unless, of course, you're doing Clubfish already, in which case there'll be a drop us a line at some point in the next. So we'll see you soon is the point we're trying to make. thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye now.